Hey, welcome back. We are going to be taking the next 2 hours, in fact, to talk about Windows 10 in a little bit more detail. And joining me to start off the conversation is Brad McCabe from the Windows team.
Morning.
Good morning. So we saw in the TechEd Europe 2014 keynote yesterday, Joe was talking about the overall kind of positioning for enterprise. Whereabouts would you start when you're thinking about actually having that conversation and drilling into things in a little bit more detail?
So I think about the world when it comes to Windows 10 with the enterprise kind of in four buckets that I think about things, right? Mm-hmm. It's about being one converged platform, so that Windows that spans everything from those smallest IoT devices all the way up to those large 82-inch conference screens, mm-hmm. right? I think about it as a product that's designed for that people will love, right? That people are going to just enjoy working with, that users are really going to be excited about. I think about it then as a product that is going to keep you safe and it's going to give you that protection against those modern security threats that are out there in the world. Mm-hmm. And lastly, I think about it sort of as that product that is just managed for continuous innovation, right? That ability to be able to deploy it rapidly, to deploy new images quickly, but also then to keep it managed and keep it up to date, keep it current, keep it running great inside the enterprise. So it's sort of those four buckets that I view the world through.
So I guess we want to think about Windows being almost ubiquitous, almost running on every single device that somebody's going to come across. It's going to run on your Surface, your phone, on whatever it could be in an IoT world, I guess.
Right. I mean, if you think about that breadth of devices, you know, you start to rattle them off, it's actually quite a long list, right? Because you've got these small sensors, maybe in a jet airplane. You've got some of these small boards. You've got these embedded type of devices, things like ATMs or soda machines out there. You move up into phones and phablets and small tablets and large tablets and two-in-ones and desktops and laptops and then, you know, even these large conference room screens, things like the Xbox. I mean, so many different device types and so many different platforms that one operating system just spans right across.
And that, I guess, the idea of the one operating system means that when you make an investment to be on Windows, that means that from an enterprise point of view, you think about security just the once, and that's actually going to be something that's going to apply everywhere inside of the stack.
Right, I mean, that's the cool thing, both for developers and IT pros, right? I mean, for a developer, I can have my code running everywhere. Mm-hmm. So maybe part of that, I might have a device like an IoT device that is completely headless, has no UI, mm-hmm. but I could still have that business logic code running there if I need it, just like I have that same exact code, that battle-tested code running out on my PCs and my tablets. I could take and have my UI as a developer. I could do some work to have it scale and adjust so that I've got a great experience on a phone, but I've also got a great experience on a device like that with a much, much larger screen. From an IT pro point of view, it's really cool because, like you were saying, from a security point of view, I can think of one security model. I can think of one security infrastructure. I can think of my management of those devices much more holistically as opposed to, oh, this is the system I use to manage my phones, and this is the system I use to manage my desktops, and this is the system that manages my IoT devices, right? So I got that. From a user point of view, while the experience doesn't have to be identical and consistent, it should still be familiar. Right, so as I grab a phone and then I move over to a tablet, then I move to a mouse and keyboard space, the device works the way it should under that input mechanism, but I still know, wow, this live tile thing is everywhere, or wow, you know, these things that I know just make sense and work on these different devices. So a lot of great benefit.
And that familiarity, when we're thinking about that, it's not just familiarity from an end user point of view. We expect that when I move between different devices, users kind of do expect the UI to just begin to morph a little bit for them. But from an IT guy's point of view, that familiarity actually comes from the fact that the management mechanisms, the security mechanisms, everything is basically going to map across.
Oh, yeah. You think about the explosion of devices out there, right? Jason yesterday in the keynote, I thought, had a great slide where he was showing a couple of years ago how... we cross this point where now we have more devices in the world than we actually have people in the world. And that curve was just hockey sticking and bending even faster. So you think about that from an IT point of view, and it's like, wow, it used to be hard managing one laptop or one desktop per person. You know, then I had to almost get into this double space, not quite for everyone, but where I had a laptop and a phone. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, as an IT pro, you're telling me, wow, I got to manage a laptop, I've got to manage a phone, I've got to manage a tablet, I've got to think about and manage these sensors over here. Great, now we're going to stick these monitors and these devices on the walls in our conference room. You mean I got to think about security and management of those. So if we don't have something common and consistent, your management cost and your management overhead is just going to explode as well as those numbers of devices. So we've got to bend that curve to make it much easier for IT.
Yeah, and it's certainly something when you look at the industry as a whole, you actually do start to see when you're talking to people that managing all these different types of devices and having to deal with all these different platforms, trying to keep up to date across six different platforms is super hard for people. So we're trying to actually make that easier, aren't we? We're trying to make it so that it's easier to keep things in a place where it's easier to understand the entire environment. And that's a great place to be.
Absolutely. And I mean, the more things we can do to make it familiar for both users and IT, for IT from a management point of view, the more things that we can do to bring it together, make it consistent, make it common, make it easier to do, the more we can bend that curve, the more we can make it easier. And I know you've got 2 hours of coverage coming, and I know Michael will be here in a little bit to go much deeper into that management discussion of exactly how we bring them together and exactly how we make it easier for folks.
Yeah, and then we're going to go deeper into a section on security and also deeper into a section on how Windows 10 is going to be great for education as well. And I think that what's interesting about talking about educational workloads is that they tend to be really high-level workloads, but people don't necessarily realize that when they're just looking at them. They tend to be workloads where every hour you get thousands of people logging on, and you have to have things developed in a way that thinks about that kind of stuff. So super important.
Yeah, education's a really interesting space, right? Because a lot of people don't think about it, right? They think about business, they think about consumer, and they're like, oh, you know, education, it's just like business. But it's a really unique space, the way that the workloads come and change, the way you think about users coming into these machines and then walking away and another user coming in. Right, the way you've got to think about testing and all of these other portions of the business, if you will, the business of education, are really different than the business and the way things operate. So while there's a lot of commonality, there's also a lot of very unique things. And you know, we focus on education quite differently than we focus and we think about the enterprise and corporations. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is a super interesting space. So as we start to think about Windows 10 in a little bit more detail, around making it a more familiar experience for our end users, tons of folks are really concerned about exactly that, making it familiar for end users who maybe haven't already moved on to Windows 8. We've got some really large customers that have done that move, but we've also got lots that are actually still a little bit slower to deploy. They're still on Windows 7. What are we doing inside of the operating system to make things more familiar?
Yeah. So, I mean, as we think about things, we have to think about it really from two different vectors, right? We have hundreds of millions of people using Windows 7 that are having a predominantly mouse and keyboard experience, and will continue to have a primarily mouse and keyboard experience. We also have large numbers of people on Windows 8, and we have a huge number of tablets and two-in-ones out there in the marketplace. And so we have to make sure that mouse and keyboard has a great experience, that it is a full first-class citizen. But we also have to make sure that touch continues to move forward and continues to also be a first-class citizen. And then we have to fill the space in the middle as well with these two-in-ones, things like the Lenovo Helix or the Surface Pro or the HP Twist, for example. So there's a pretty big spectrum of devices in there, and that spectrum is growing. And those devices are primarily mouse and keyboard at one moment, and at the next moment they have no more mouse, no more keyboard, and they're 100% touch experience. And 2 minutes later, they're somewhere in the middle of using mouse, keyboard, and also reaching up.
Yeah.
So we thought about that experience, and you see a lot of this in the technology preview, in the tech preview today. where we've done a lot of thinking around mouse and keyboard. You see things like the start menu and the way we took very familiar concepts from Windows 7, which we continue to enhance and move forward, and then we married in concepts from Windows 8 that people loved, like live tiles. Mm-hmm. Right? People said, I love live tiles. I love to get this information about, you know, what's going on in this app without launching the app.
Yeah.
But we also heard quite clearly from those mouse and keyboard users, right, that when they clicked and they went to the start screen, that some of them felt a little ungrounded, a little disconnected, confused. So I think we've got a great solution for them. Right? We let people customize it so I can drag it, I can size it to whatever I want. If I liked that full screen experience, I can also have that as well with Windows 10. So really the best of both worlds and whatever works for me. And you see that philosophy throughout the entire operating system. And you even see the way it interacts with you adjust to the way you touch things or the way you interact with the mouse. Great example is the task view, right? What I get when I go to Alt-Tab.
Yep.
If I Alt-Tab or I mouse into there and click off the taskbar, when I move the mouse over my programs, I get the X in the corner with that hover effect, right? Hover's a concept that we're all very, very familiar with. So I move over, here comes my X, and I can click that and close the application. Now, when I reach and maybe I swipe in from the left to bring up that task view, or maybe I reach down and I touch that same task view icon on the taskbar that I had clicked with my mouse. But Windows 10 goes, wow, you've reached out, you've touched the device. Well, you don't really have a concept of hover with your finger. So if you pay attention, the X is actually already there on every one of those programs so that you can just reach out real quick with your finger and touch to close them. Very, very subtle, something you don't really notice unless someone points it out. But it feels right, right? You know,
yeah.
It just feels intuitive.
It's one of those things that I've not noticed at all, actually. I must admit, I've been using 10 for months, and literally, I do both of those things all the time. I hadn't noticed that little tiny bit of subtle between the very smooth conversion between the two.
Exactly.
And that's, I guess, the right way. It shouldn't be noticeable, but it should be useful.
And that's one of the traits of great design, or you know, is that you know you think about it, whether it's in architecture or software or anything, really, right? You don't notice the design. You don't go out and say, "Oh, there's X or Y in that," but it just feels right. It just feels natural. It just looks good, right? You know, you see a great looking car or a great looking building, and you're like, sometimes you can't put your finger on it. But it just is what you like.
Yeah, it just works. It's one of those things. I mean, I notice all the time. You probably see exactly the same thing. You walk around the office, and you've got an office, you've got meeting rooms. Every so often, you'll see somebody holding their laptop, trying to work out where the meeting room is, and they've opened the keyboard up and they're looking around and trying to find it because they're looking in Outlook for the location.
Right.
What I've started to notice, as internally we've started to test Windows 10. People are moving, they're undocking their device, they're walking around, and actually it's turned into a touch device. They're not having to flip out the keyboard. They're also just walking around with a touch device. They go back to their desk again, and it becomes their normal working environment. They've got multiple monitors. Everything's just docked and working. So it's kind of neat.
Exactly, and I've kind of gone on that same journey myself, right? You know, when I first got a Surface, which was the first convertible that I happened to have, the first two-in-one device, it was a great laptop for me, right? And I used it primarily as a great laptop. And then I started to find, hey, it was really nice, right? I'm using mouse and keyboard, and I love the DOS prompt. I love the command shell. I go way back to the DOS days, so I'm very, very comfortable there. But I started to find I was reaching up. I don't know what it is for me, but when command dialogues come up, I just like to reach up and hit the OK button, so much faster for me than my mouse. And that was kind of my first step in this journey. And then, you know, there'd still be times where early on, to your point, I'd be walking around the hall, still kind of carrying it a little funny with the keyboard because I was still natural.
Yeah.
Whereas now I've just kind of progressed on that journey where I just flip the keyboard under and I use it as a tablet, and I have that great experience. And you kind of walk down that journey with these two-in-ones.
And I love the way that we've actually enhanced that multi-monitor experience as well. There's certain little things which, when you start using multiple monitors, actually really start to come to life. And again, they're really subtle, but they suddenly work in a way that you really expect. So what have we actually done with that kind of multi-mon power user type experience?
Yeah, so we've done a lot of work trying to make sure that we think about all ends of this spectrum, right? We've got these novice users, these beginner users, and we want to make sure they have a great experience. And then we want to make sure we walk these steps all the way down to that power user that you're talking about. And so we've done a lot of things there, right? We've done things around multi-monitor so that, for example, Snap is very natural. We found, especially if we've continued to enhance Snap from Windows 7 and some of the enhancements we've made in Windows 10, that people love Snap. But with multi-monitors, it's really kind of hard because when you go to snap it into the corner of the window, well, are you trying to snap it to the corner of the window or are you trying to move it to the next monitor? Mm-hmm. And so we've done a lot of work, things that Joe showed in the keynote yesterday, to make sure that Snap works great on those multiple monitors. And as Joe also showed, you know, we've done work even in the DOS window to make sure copy, to make sure paste works with control C and control V, those very natural muscle memory things. Kind of one of my favorite command shell things on that power user is I hate when I have long command, or not command prompts, but long directory structures that I happen to be in and they're wrapping around because the command window is only so big.
Yep.
One of the things I love about Windows 10, it's so subtle, but it's one of my favorite things because it was my pet peeve. I can just reach down, grab the side of that command window, and drag it to any width that I want. I'm not bound to certain predefined sizes. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, it's a small thing, but as a command prompt guy, I absolutely love it.
The command prompt stuff is kind of amazing. When you look at the fact that we've made those subtle changes, I guess most folks are out there are saying finally to the command prompt and to the PowerShell command prompt as well. Those changes are actually just really nice. And I found there's one thing in there. If you go into the experimental tab, you can actually turn on the opacity. Mm-hmm. So you can move between everything being 100% opaque and 30% opaque. And lots of people are trying to find a use for that. And the one thing that where I found this really, really useful is actually if I'm doing a deployment, say with PowerShell DSC, I can actually, I know my deployment's going to take some time. I want to be able to monitor it. But I'm working out of hours. What do I want to do? Well, I'm going to fade it down to 30% opacity.
Right.
And then I'm literally just going to put that in front of my video that I'm going to watch. So I can entertain myself, and I can still make sure that everything's running okay, even if I'm just working on a single monitor. It's the kind of place where we've got these little extra, I guess, innovations inside of the way that we're making things easier to use.
Right. I mean, isn't it great? Here we are in 2014, and we're still having we're still having conversations about enhancing the command prompt, and we're still getting really excited about it. I mean,
yeah, I think Snover up here in the session previous to this at TechEd, and I think it's kind of interesting. We're actually some of those really core power user features, the things that IT guys love, the things that devs love, is having access to, well, things that really matter to them, and those are the tools that people use on a daily basis.
Exactly.
And it's kind of interesting. You see lots of the, on the internal forums at Microsoft, you see lots of our own devs actually saying how much they're liking these improvements inside of the operating system. So it's neat that we're seeing this stuff. What about the ability to do multiple desktops? That's something which, again, is getting a fair amount of coverage from people saying, it's nice that we've got that kind of feature. Is there anything kind of cool that we've actually added in there to make that a little bit easier?
Yeah, so I mean, multiple desktops are a great feature. I personally love them. I do so many different things in the course of the day. You know, one moment I am sitting here, like when I get back from Barcelona, I've got to fill out my expense report. So I'll have the expense report app up inside of Microsoft. I'll have some other applications up as I'm maybe got email up looking at a PDF of my hotel bill and all these things that I'm doing. And so that'll take up things. And then simultaneously, I'm very much an ADHD guy, so I'll start down my expense report. But then before I finish that, I'll jump over and I'll start working on a PowerPoint for the next conference or event that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I'll kind of have that going on. And of course, you know, email is constantly popping up in my face, so I'll be switching over to email. And by the middle of the day, I've just got this monitor loaded. You know, you look at my taskbar, and it's like, how many more applications can I have open down there? And I've really taken to multiple desktops, just because on my laptop, as I'm moving around and such through the day, I can't space all these things out across all my monitors. So my laptop in particular gets really, really busy. And so I love these multiple desktops because I'll just start, what I've started doing is, great, I'll fire up a new desktop and now let's start doing my expense reports over there. Mm-hmm. Great, let's fire up another desktop and here's all the work I'm doing in PowerPoint for that next conference presentation I'm doing. I'll have another desktop that's sort of my home or my workspace, if you will, that has some common things that I always have, like mail open there. And so I can really jump around. And for a guy like me that sort of goes bing, 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 bouncing around, I love it because it helps me just focus in on, okay, this is the task, focus in on here, right? I don't have all these other little things just kind of grabbing for my attention.
Yeah, I found exactly the same thing around focus. So I was doing some work last week, and I was able to deliver one session to an audience in Estonia and actually kind of work on the on desktop A, but then I could be prepping my next session on another desktop, and I didn't need to confuse the audience by moving between the two. It was nice and separated. And I found exactly the same thing with someone who's probably not a power user, my wife. She's actually on Windows 10 already, and she has all of her day-to-day work running on her first desktop. But then when she goes home in the evening, she now moves over to desktop two. She doesn't want to lose that. She's halfway through a 400-line email to somebody. So she doesn't want to lose that. She just moves to the second desktop and then continues booking a holiday or whatever on the second desktop. Then moves back again. So it's become one of those kind of useful features in a number of different scenarios.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things, especially given the audience out there, not a lot of people know this, but if you're using multiple desktops, Control, Windows, and the arrow keys to switch between them. Phenomenal shortcut as a keyboard, as a mouse and keyboard guy. Like, I'll use that all the time. I'm just working, and I know where it is. I mean, it's really cool because if you go down, you'll see all of your apps down on the taskbar. But if you click on one of them, especially if you've joined the Windows Insider program, you've got the later builds from Tech Preview. It's really cool if you're using multiple desktops because you click on one of those apps that's on a different desktop, and you actually see the desktop with this nice little visual effect sort of slide over to the other one, you know, and then you can jump to that desktop. You're right there. So whether it's mouse off the taskbar or Control, Windows, arrow key to move between them. Very, very efficient, even for a mouse keyboard guy.
It's one of those things that makes it, again, it makes it feel more familiar to the end user because as you it could be a jarring experience. If you just go and click on something and another desktop suddenly appears, that could kind of scare your typical non-power user.
Exactly.
But with this animation that just moves it between the two, subtle, but actually helps you to map in your mind where things are, and super useful.
And I mean, that little subtlety is just a great example of, right, we put Tech Preview out there. You know, we've been very open, honest, and transparent about, hey, this is really early, and this is the first step in a journey, right? And we want folks to come on that journey with us. And you can see through the first update that we pushed out last week, right, that we've continued to refine things, we've continued to enhance things, which is why I really encourage folks to jump into the Windows Insider program and kind of come on that journey with us, right? See these enhancements that we're making. And hey, if you're looking at something, you've got a great idea, as a Windows Insider, there's that feedback tool. So let us know. Give us that feedback, right? As Joe said, you know, it takes time for us to code it. It takes time for us to test it. So, you know, please be patient when you give us that feedback. But I think this will be a great journey for people to come on where they can see things earlier than we've ever shown them. They can give us feedback, and they can kind of watch that feedback trickle through the process and come out the other side, you know. And, you know, I think of the campaign with Windows 7, and that was my idea. Well, I think, you know, with Windows 10, we just take that to another level even.
Yeah, and it's super interesting. When you go and look at things like the forum on User Voice, actually, we've got the engineers looking at that. So that's actually a really great way to get the information going right back into the engineering team, really starting to help us to understand the way that people are using Windows, in addition to the telemetry that we're picking up and the information that's coming back through the Insider program itself. So it's a super cool way to do it. I guess I just want to be super clear on this. We don't expect people to be going and doing mass deployment of Windows 10 today. That's not what the
absolutely internet, not at this point. I mean, from a enterprise IT point of view, IT pros should definitely be downloading it. While I run Windows 10 on my primary machine, that's not what I would recommend to IT pros, right? Especially if they're going to opt in. One of the other things that we put into the later build was the ability to take updates either fast or slow. So I certainly wouldn't put it on my primary machine if I'm going to update into that fast update cycle, right? Put it on a secondary machine that you can play with often. But I would encourage them to sort of take a look at it, maybe take some machines in their lab that are running some of their corporate images and just try some of the upgrades. I mean, remember, it's early. Yep. You know, we're not saying it's done. If we were, we would have shipped it. But do some of those upgrades. Make sure, see how that's working. See how that in-place upgrade from Windows 7 up to Windows 10 is working on your corporate images. Try some of your corporate apps just to get a very early feel for application compatibility. And if you see some issues, certainly let us know so we have some runway to take a look at it and address it before we ship. But just start to take some of those early looks and those early peeks.
I think it's a super useful thing for people to do. People have always been asking us, why don't we give this to enterprises to be able to use up front, to be able to make make a little bit of a test in their own lab and start to build things out. Doesn't mean you have to build it out onto hundreds of machines, but just getting that basic understanding is a really good idea.
Exactly.
You keep looking at my T-shirt.
I am. I'm trying. I'm like looking at it. I'm trying to figure out what the code is inside of there. I haven't figured it out yet.
Joe used the hashtag, didn't he?
I heard there was like hashtag not binary, but you know, I'm still trying to figure out. Maybe if I move the quadrants of the flag around, maybe that does something to it.
Yeah, looking at it upside down, I'm not actually able to understand what the code is either. I'm guessing that if somebody can work out the code, they're probably going to find that they'll get retweeted quite a lot. Just purely for doing it.
Yeah, I shared about Windows 10 filled up with ones and zeros repeating. I can't figure out what the pattern is there.
Yeah, it's super difficult.
People
do keep staring at it. So hopefully by the time we get to the end of this, we'll have somebody that knows what the answer is to the numbers that are on the Windows 10 T-shirt. So
exactly,
very very cool. Thanks very much for coming along and joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been super useful. We're going to be back in a few moments' time, and we're going to talk about management and deployment with Mike Niehaus. We're going to go through a little bit more details there. Anything you want to just kind of say to help team Michael up a little bit?
No, I think Michael's got a great topic. I think it's top of mind for a lot of IT pros. You know, how am I going to get these Windows 7 machines I have forward? How am I going to deal with machines as I get more and more net new machines coming in? How do I get them deployed fast and efficiently? So I think he's got some great answers to those questions.
Cool. Thanks very much for joining us. And we'll be right back after a very short break.